Some people get really quiet, sort of like talking, you know, whenever you talk about death or mortality, people, like at funerals, tend to have, some people tend to shy away and not want to say anything more. But I would say the majority of people become interested when I mention that we're doing this work to try and better understand suicide, because most people have been touched by suicide in some way.
This is Matthew Nock from Harvard University. He's a psychologist who's trying to understand, monitor, and prevent suicide using smartphones.
Suicide's been a leading cause of death for thousands of years, and the suicide rate in the U.S. is virtually identical to what it was 100 years ago. I think there's a lot of issues, ethical and legal and clinical, to work out, but we can't be paralyzed by them because we have to do something. People are continuing to die, and if we have technology that we think can do a better job, it is our responsibility to test it out and to take steps forward to try and improve the care that we can provide to people at risk.
Over 10 years ago, Matthew started his first study into suicide using tech.
So the first study that we did in my lab was, before smartphones were widely available, we outfitted self-injurious and suicidal adolescents with Palm Pilots.
Fast forward 10 years, and Matthew has more options.
We've gone from being able to give people Palm Pilots to having them wear harnesses under their clothes to measure things like heart rate and skin conductance, to now just giving people a wrist-worn watch and loading an app on their smartphone, which most people have now anyway. So this work's become much more feasible as these tools have become much more ubiquitous. And so it allows us to take bigger steps forward much more quickly.
The people involved in Matthew's experiments are all acutely suicidal, and they all give their consent to have apps loaded onto their smartphones.
These apps ping people several times a day to ask them about their thoughts and feelings and behaviors, including thoughts of suicide and intentions to act on those thoughts. Those are the what we call the active data, or the self-report data. In the background, though, with their consent, we're collecting data from their phone to see how active are they physically, how much are they moving around, where are they going, how long are they staying there, and what are they doing on their phone? Are they calling others? Are people calling them? Are they texting others? Are people texting them? To get a sense of people's social and physical activity, and their sleep as well. And we also have them wear wrist-worn biosensors, where we collect data also on their physical activity, but also on their physiological arousal.
The goal is to take all of these data and try to predict when someone might enter a suicidal state.
So far, we have one paper that we finished that is not yet published, so I don't want to say too much about the details of it, but we're finding that using data from a person's wrist-worn biosensor, we can predict with about 75% accuracy whether that person's going to have serious thoughts of suicide the next day.
The strongest indicators Matthew's found are things like lots of agitation and movement the night before an event.
And this is consistent with what we've heard for decades from clinician reports, that people who are suicidal before they make a suicide attempt or die by suicide have these periods of extreme unrest or agitation, a feeling of great psychological discomfort that might be in part driving their suicidal thinking or behavior.
Now, there are various caveats to these results, which we'll get to in a minute. But before we do, it's worth noting that the kind of forecasting Matthew describes would mean researchers could very well be finding out about a person's emotional state before they're even aware it's coming. If that state could be sensed, Matthew then thinks that tried and tested psychological interventions, albeit a bit modified, could be beamed directly to the patient at the opportune moment.
We as a field of psychological science have made great strides in understanding how to use cognitive and behavioral approaches to decrease people's depression and anxiety and psychological distress. What we're doing is taking the same kind of skills, breaking them down into small pieces, and sending them to people exactly when we believe they're in distress, so they can use them when most needed.
Now, I mentioned the caveats, and here are a few of them. This is only a small study, a few dozen people, and it's yet to be seen if it will be repeatable across others or larger groups. And then there's the problem of false positives. It's important not to miss a potential suicidal event, but predicting them too often could be just as dangerous.
If we are going to be beaming people interventions, we want to make sure we're doing it at the right time, in the right place, and not having too many false positives, because we don't want to overburden people, or by sending interventions to them so much, we could potentially reduce the potency of the intervention. So we don't want to be crying wolf, so to speak, and saying that many, many more people are at risk than really are.
It's also hard to ignore that a system which accurately predicts someone's mood could have other, more sinister uses outside of medicine.
Is there a possibility of misuse if we know that someone's in a period of emotional vulnerability, so to speak? Does this open them up to be more likely to purchase certain kinds of care, certain kinds of interventions? I think that's absolutely a possibility. Not something that we're doing, but I think something we need to be mindful of so that we can ensure that people who are in a state of emotional distress or emotional vulnerability, so to speak, are provided with better care but not taken advantage of.
That was Matthew Nock from Harvard University speaking with Noah Baker. You can read more about Matthew's work and that of others in the field in a feature article at nature.com/news. If you're affected by the issues discussed in this story, you can find a list of organisations that offer advice and support at go.nature.com/wellbeing. Click on the support tab for that list.